Good morning, and welcome to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Albert Morales, your host and managing partner of the IBM Center for the Business of Government. We created the center in 1998 to encourage discussion and research into new approaches to improving government effectiveness. You can find out more about the center by visiting us on the web at businessofgovernment.org. The Business of Government Radio Hour features a conversation about management with a government executive who is changing the way government does business. Our special guest this morning is Michael Ryan, Vice President of Administration and Finance with the Millennium Challenge Corporation. Good morning, Michael.
Good morning.
And joining us in our conversation is Pete Boyer, Director in IBM's Federal Consulting Practice. Good morning, Pete.
Good morning, Al.
Mike, perhaps you could start by giving us an overview of the Millennium Challenge Corporation. Tell us a little bit about the mission and give us an overview of the Millennium Challenge Act of 2003 and some of its key requirements.
That would be my great pleasure. The MCC mission is simply to reduce poverty by supporting sustainable economic growth in developing countries and those countries which create and maintain sound policy environments. The Millennium Challenge Act established MCC to administer the Millennium Challenge account. This was established in January 2004 as a result of President Bush's commitment at the Monterey Summit. And that summit focused on financing for development, and the purpose, as stated, was to provide greater resources for developing countries taking greater responsibility for their own development. It's sometimes been referred to as assistance with accountability. The Act itself mandates that MCC provide assistance in a manner that promotes economic growth and the alleviation of extreme poverty and strengthens good governance, economic freedom, and, of course, investments in people. The MCC program, of course, is only one component of our overall foreign assistance strategy, but it is an important and an innovative one. It's something new. And our work draws on lessons learned from international development organizations over the past 50 years. And it focuses on the long-term mission of reducing poverty, as I mentioned, through economic growth. In short, we work in partnership with some of the poorest countries to create country ownership instead of long-term dependence on assistance. We want to give assistance in order for countries to take over the job of their own economic growth and alleviate poverty within their borders.
Mike, this is certainly a non-trivial challenge and mission. Could you tell us a little bit about how your organization is organized, the size of your budget, and how many people are employed within your organization?
MCC was designed as a small federal corporation, and it's meant to ensure accountability for the aid we administer. As a federal corporation, it's managed by a chief executive officer who's currently Ambassador John Danilovich, and he's appointed by the president and confirmed by the U.S. Senate. What makes us a little bit different is we're overseen by a board of directors who make the major decisions, what countries to give assistance to and the like. And that board of directors is chaired by the Secretary of State. The vice chair is the Secretary of the Treasury. Other members include the United States Trade Representative, the U.S. Aid Administrator, and it has, interestingly, two public members currently, although there may be more in the future, Kenneth Hackett, who's the President of Catholic Relief Services, and Governor Christine Todd Whitman, who, in addition to being the governor of New Jersey, was also a former EPA administrator and now is the president of the Whitman Strategy Group. We have a number of departments. We have operations. We have a Department of Accountability, a Department of Policy and International Relations. Of course, we have Congressional Public Affairs and an Office of the General Counsel. And then we have the department that I head up, Administration and Finance. As far as our budget goes, the commitment had been to rise to $5 billion a year. The current request is for $3 billion. The House passed bill now is at $2 billion. I don't know where that's going to end up. And clearly, one thing that gives us a good deal of flexibility is that all of our MCC funds are no-year funds, which means that we can obligate funds for a five-year compact at the beginning of the 5 years, and it's available until it's expended on that compact, which saves us from year-to-year ups and downs, and countries can rely on this assistance. As far as the level of staff, as I said, we're small and we aim to be small. We want to rise to a staff of 300 in Washington, D.C. Currently, we have 20 people stationed overseas that are above that 300 number. And that number overseas should rise as we establish additional compacts in other countries. At the present time, we have approximately 280 people in Washington.
So almost 300 people managing $3 billion in assets.
That's right.
Now, Mike, what are your specific responsibilities and duties as a vice president of administration and finance? And could you tell us about the areas under your purview?
Sure, Pete. I am essentially a chief financial officer in the federal mold. I'm responsible for the same areas that many CFOs are responsible for: financial management and reporting, financial services, budget formulation, execution, development of annual performance plans, oversight of financial systems, and producing the annual performance and accountability report, and procurement. I also have oversight of our HR, human resources, recruiting and development, facilities management, both in Washington and overseas, IT and personnel security. So just the full range of administrative and financial duties that you would expect to see in an organization with my title.
Now, Mike, you've clearly had a very interesting career. Could you describe your career path for our listeners? Specifically, how did you begin your career?
Well, I should start off by saying that I have been a civil servant until my current appointment with MCC for many, many years. But my first position actually was a mathematics teacher in Baltimore City Schools after I earned an undergraduate degree at St. John's College in Annapolis. But I left teaching math and went to Harvard, where I got a Ph.D. in Near Eastern Languages and Civilizations. I got that degree in 1981. After having joined the federal government in 1979. During my studies on that degree, I spent 3 years researching in Egypt and traveling around the Middle East under a Fulbright, a Smithsonian, and a Center for Arabic Study Abroad fellowships. I've had several positions in the Department of Defense and the Department of State. When I first joined in 1979, as I mentioned previously, I was a Middle East analyst for the Department of Defense. I've also had senior-level positions, including Deputy Director of the Plans Directorate and the Defense Security Assistance Agency. I've been the Acting Deputy Assistant Secretary for International Narcotics and Law Enforcement Affairs in the Department of State. I was also the Executive Director and Controller of that same bureau in the Department of State. I also worked at EPA, where I first met Governor Whitman that I mentioned before when she was the administrator. And I first started as a comptroller there in 1997 with responsibility for budget formulation and execution, as well as all aspects of financial management and operations. I became the deputy director of EPA then in 2000, and I had that job until 2006, May actually, when I joined MCC. At EPA, I also managed their strategic planning, budgeting, financial management, performance measurement, analysis, and the accountability functions.
Mike, that's a very broad set of experiences. I'm curious, how have these experiences prepared you for your current leadership role at MCC and have informed your management approach and leadership style?
I guess being deputy CFO at EPA and acting CFO during periods when EPA did not have a Senate-confirmed CFO in place was the best preparation for my technical duties at MCC. Having a practical experience of managing a CFO shop, including problem solving in all areas normally reporting to a CFO, and also extremely useful contacts within the CFO Council, helpful opportunities to share experiences across the federal CFO community. Previously, I think overseas experiences in the Department of State and Defense, where I was based in Washington but did extensive travel, in addition to my work as I on my degree that I referred to previously, helped me understand other countries' governments and cultures and how you deal with countries in their own terms and not necessarily bring your own cultural assumptions to play. So it was a useful body of knowledge overseas and in the CFO environment because I had to deal with a wide variety of people and people who approach tasks from different angles. And it's tremendously useful in the federal workplace, which is, as you know, wonderfully diverse. Another useful leadership lesson from defense was that you really have to build a team from the people that you inherit. And then you set to the task of recruiting others. And everybody brings skills to the task. It's a leader's responsibility, really, to find the best way to use each team member's skills to support the mission and target your recruiting to fill any areas where skills need reinforcement. I think it's another example of why it's important to appreciate the diversity of abilities and backgrounds represented in the federal workforce. Based on all the talents that federal employees bring to work every day, I think we're well-equipped for problem solving from a variety of perspectives. And we're especially well set up to deal with foreign governments, many of whose children, if you will, came to the United States either recently or in the distant past as immigrants and deal very well with those cultures. Another lesson learned from my experience in defense, state, and EPA, and especially now at MCC, is the importance of public-private partnerships. The private sector has a depth of talent and knowledge that's always refreshed, and government can make good use of private sector expertise to augment its workforce to accomplish specific tasks without institutionalizing that expertise when it might not be appropriate to the next set of tasks that lie ahead. It helps to keep public sector organizations more nimble by allowing us to take on specialized talent as needed while maintaining a basic core of skills in the career ranks. For example, when EPA was assigned to a government center of excellence to host financial systems, my staff and I argued successfully for public-private partnership, allowing private sector centers of excellence to compete for technical services in the IT area and in accounting. This competition, I understand, here at the beginning of December, is still going on at EPA. OPM is now, I understand, going to do something similar, and I think that's a good model for a small, lean organization like MCC. That is, reaching out to the private sector for help in those areas that the private sector does especially well and can tailor its support for the needs of the day without institutionalizing that support and fixing it in place.
That's fantastic. I can see now why you are focusing on solving some of the world's greatest challenges. Thank you. What kinds of innovations are being pursued by the Millennium Challenge Corporation? We will ask Michael Ryan, Vice President, Administration and Finance with the Millennium Challenge Corporation, to share with us when the conversation about management continues on the Business of Government Hour.